May the words of my lips and the meditations of all our hearts be now and always acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Please be seated. I have always believed that the Passion narrative interprets itself very simply to the heart of a believer. I know that from personal experience. A long time ago, I was a theological student, and all theological students need to be led by their teachers to the boundaries of their faith in order to understand the difference between faith and certainty. I was led to one of those boundaries by my teachers at King's College London around the time when Neil Armstrong was stepping onto the moon. What was it that brought me back from that edge? It was St. Paul's summary of the Passion of Christ, the very words we heard in our first lesson, which helped me to turn the corner and begin to trust again. I know the power of that story to turn lives around. It turned mine around. I want to encourage you to be there this week, to follow this story, to let the story of Christ's passion and resurrection speak to you deeply. The Passion narrative begins here today on Palm Sunday. It begins with the fulfillment of a prophecy from the prophet Zechariah, which reads, "Tell the daughter of Zion, look, your king is coming to you, humble and mounted on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey." So Jesus says to his disciples, "Untie the two donkeys and bring them to me. If anyone asks you why you are doing it, say the Lord needs them." Let me tell you about the prophet Zechariah. He was working in Jerusalem at a time when the people were having great problems. They had returned from exile for a whole generation. They had begun to rebuild the temple. But they had very meager resources and greatly reduced circumstances. This new temple could never be as great as the original one. And there was no proper king, no one on the throne of the family of David. And Judah was just the province of Judah in a far corner of the empire of the Medes and Persians. Zechariah had a lot to say about how the people could overcome their problems. And he told them that there would be a solution to the big problem of the absence of a real king. God would provide them with a king again. It was a promise. In the New Testament, both Matthew, as we have heard today, and John quote part of a verse from Zechariah's book. "Rejoice greatly, daughter of Zion. Shout aloud, daughter Jerusalem. Behold, your king comes to you, triumphant and victorious he is, humble, riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey." Now everyone knew the story of Jesus going into Jerusalem riding on a donkey. And it was obvious that the Christians understood this as our belief that Jesus was the king God had promised back in the days of Zechariah. Matthew takes it a little too literally and has Jesus riding on a donkey and on a colt, the foal of a donkey, but the message is not lost. There was no formal request for the use of that colt. Jesus sent his disciples to take it by royal decree. So then, as our king, the Lord has a right to anything we own. No property rights that we can have can take the real ownership of anything out of his hands. We talk about our possessions as if they were really ours, but nothing is really ours. Everything we have is borrowed from the King and should be used for his purposes. So as Jesus sets out on that royal journey that will see him lifted up on the cross for us, giving his all for the sake of us all, when his kingship will be hidden in the darkness and horror of the cross, there are important issues here which we must not overlook. Christ has a right to call for anything we have whenever he wants to use it. He has a right to ask for our money, for it is his far more than it is ours. When our property is asked of us for some providential purpose, we shouldn't grumble, but remember what the King has given up for us, and that the King has a right to do what he wishes with his own property. It was in our human flesh that Jesus made the great sacrifice for the sins of the world. The little sacrifices he asks from us, he asks in order that we might understand the true nature and meaning of sacrifice itself. Sacrifice itself. It is a voluntary offering, but it's also a necessary offering, an offering that will answer a real need. It's like the Good Samaritan's donkey and his cash in the face of the needs of the man who had been robbed and assaulted. It is like the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes which the boy gave in the face of a hungry multitude. So, the Lord may need our cars to carry burdens for others or to carry those who need a ride. He often has need of our money, our hands, our feet, our lips, our influence. And we do well if in our minds we hold all our possessions ready at his disposal. For then finally, we begin to understand what it cost him, our king, to go to that man and demand that colt and ride on it, knowing that it was the opening act of the ultimate drama that would see him suffer and die for us, so that we might come to rise again in him. Amen.